Case versus Johnson. Mr. Potts.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Brian Potts. I'm from Foley and Lardner on behalf of the defendant, appellant Willie Earl Johnson, in this case. If ever there were a case to overturn based on clear error, this is it. Over a year ago, I stood before this court arguing that my client didn't receive a fair trial or a reasonable sentence. In response, this court vacated my client's conspiracy conviction and sent his case back to the district court for resentencing, stating that the sentence was based plainly on the conspiracy count. At resentencing, the district court chose to ignore this court's decision and sentenced my client to the same.
No, that's not right. She thinks the 72 months is the right sentence. She's entitled to do that.
Well,
as long as she doesn't base it on the conspiracy, right? But if she has other grounds, like the guidelines, she can say, yeah, 72 months is a good sentence.
I believe
discusses why she thinks your client is a danger and so on and incorrigible, and why there should be stiff sentences for drug violators. So 72 months is pretty light by the standards of current drug sentencing that we see. We usually see much more serious sentences. This guy's a career drug dealer, so
he
got off light, didn't he?
I don't think he did.
What do you think would be an appropriate sentence for him?
I think time served to date based on...
How long is that?
He's been in prison a little over 20 months, I believe, 21 months.
21 months for a career drug dealer like this?
Not a career drug dealer. None of his previous offenses involved crack cocaine. We're talking about at most...
Caught. They're not caught every time. This is his business, right?
This is not his business. I don't think it's fair to assume that at all.
Let me
point out there are three errors that I want to talk about briefly today, and I'll start with the most obvious one. If I told you that yesterday I went to a car dealership and I spent $5,000 on a car, would it be reasonable for you to assume that
judges frequently, after being reversed for a sentence, they reinstate the sentence on proper grounds, because often there are multiple reasons for a sentence. And we may knock out one or two, but if there are other grounds that are legitimate, the judge can sentence the person the same.
Well, what I'm saying is her grounds were not legitimate. To answer your question, she sentenced my client based on 23 grams of crack cocaine, which was not based on reasonable or accurate information, based on the prices of crack cocaine at the
time. Now, it's all murky, but these, you know, FBI people testify about this lingo that the drug people use. What's wrong with that?
It's not about the lingo that the drug people use. It's
about
the fact that...
Well, that's certainly germane, right? What's a basketball and so on?
Well, sure, but what we know is how much he paid. He paid $90 for a basketball. And
there's this testimony. Apparently, drugs are very cheap in Aurora, right?
Right, 10 times less than the market price at the time. That doesn't make any sense. That's not plausible. That's not reasonable or accurate. Now, maybe there's a justification, but the government has provided no justification. A defendant has a constitutional right to be sentenced based on reliable and accurate information. And if a defendant brings forward information that puts into question the government's sentencing evidence, the burden then shifts to the government to prove the accuracy of that information. The defendant here brought forth information showing that the price of crack cocaine was 10 times more.
There's conflicting evidence on the price of cocaine in Aurora, right? It may be very cheap for all we know. How do we know? These FBI people claim to be knowledgeable about drug prices in different, which apparently differ regionally, right? Supply and demand are not
sure,
uniform across the United States. So
They don't differ that much. If it was that...
Well, how do you know?
Well, I can tell you that the sentencing report to Congress we provided was based on 20 metropolitan areas.
Talking about Aurora. Come on.
Sure. Well, if the price was 10 times less in Aurora, why wouldn't the drug dealers be driving the drugs and selling them in Chicago for 10 times more?
Maybe
it's an
they
hour
are.
Away.
We don't know.
Is it clear that the national price was wholesale or...
Well, and that's a point raised by the government, and that point is easily refuted by the record. First of all, the government's witness, Agent Wilson, testified that the $90 for 3.5 grams was the street price. So it's an apples-to-apples comparison with the data we provided. Second, if I could turn you to the chart on page 4 of our brief, if you look at the profit margins, based on the data we provided versus the government's assertions, the government is basically saying that Vincent and Parker paid $20 a gram for crack cocaine in the kilo amounts and sold those drugs to Johnson for $26 or $30 a gram, which would be about 30 to 50% profit margin. Under the government's assumptions...
Graph on page 4 of your brief.
Of the reply brief. I'm sorry. The table. The government's assertion is that Johnson was then reselling those drugs for $100 a gram. That's 300% profit. That just doesn't make any sense. If you look at all of the other data that we've provided, the bigger drug dealers are the ones that are making the money. They're making 300 or 400%, not 30 or 40 or 50%, as the government alleges. The bottom line is the government could have provided a justification for the price discrepancy. Simply saying, oh, these are street prices, or oh, this is Aurora, Illinois, that's not enough to explain away a discrepancy that's 10 times more based on market data. The only reasonable explanation based on the record here is that Johnson was either getting a lot less than the government asserts when he was buying a $90 basketball or a $30 pack, or he was getting marijuana and not crack cocaine. Now, the second sentencing error that the district court committed was relevant conduct. She assumed that every time Johnson called and ordered a basketball or a pack, that was enough evidence to show that he not only possessed those drugs, but that he intended to sell them. And what we're talking about here are non-distribution quantities.
But he said he didn't use crack.
Well, he didn't say he didn't use crack. He said in one of the calls at the very beginning, I don't get high. And we don't know what that means. He could have been talking about any number of drugs. It also was at the beginning of, in July 2nd, at the beginning of the calls. The calls stem out over 2 months. So who knows, maybe he started using drugs afterwards. Again, it can't be the rule in this circuit that simply calling and ordering drugs, a non-distribution quantity of drugs, that you can assume, based on that evidence, that it's possession with intent to distribute crack cocaine. If this were a conspiracy, yes, you can include all the quantities. There's no question. But this is possession with intent to distribute. And yes, I realize there was evidence of the July, this court said the July 2nd and August 14th calls, those constituted evidence of possession with intent to distribute. But again, it can't be the rule in this circuit that buying and selling one quantity of non-distribution quantity of drugs, that every time you call an order after that, you're assumed to have been buying those drugs for resale when they're a non-distribution quantity. It just doesn't make sense. There's no evidence that he didn't use these drugs. Now, the third error that was committed is clear error. It's the procedural error. Under this court's Arbery decision, it's right on point. The judge had to make findings with respect to our ratio arguments. She didn't make any findings. We raised the issue numerous times. The decision is directly on point, but we ask you, please do not remand the case only on the procedural defect.
There's no indication that she based the sentence on her conception of what the proper ratio between powder and crack is. She just thought, bad guy, you know, bad attitude and so on, stiff sentence is called for, 72 months. Why does she have to get into ratios?
The Arbery decision is clearly on point. She can, under the Spears decision, she can deviate from the ratio. We raised that point numerous times in front of her. And in her decision, she abided by the guideline range, didn't discuss our ratio arguments at all, even though I raised them in the middle of her decision, essentially. She still...
She didn't like you. She wanted to go with the ratio that's in the guidelines. What's wrong with that?
In the Arbery decision, the government made the same argument, and they it flatly rejected it and said, you can't assume what the judge's reasons were for deviating from the guidelines. She has to say...
She didn't deviate from the guidelines.
Well, she did. She sentenced him below the guideline range.
Well, you're not going to criticize her for sentencing below the guidelines range. What are you talking about?
Well, absolutely, because she used the...
Absolutely? Well, that's crazy, right?
She used the 57-to-1 ratio, and that's where
honestly,
she got the guideline
range.
Honestly,
she wasn't thinking about the ratios.
Well, we made the
argument... Do you think she has her own ratio of 57-to-1? That's ridiculous.
No, that's the ratio in the guidelines.
Well, whatever it is, she's not... She's going by the guidelines. She thinks the 72 months is the right sentence. She gave a lot of reasons why she thought it was the right sentence. She didn't want to get... She didn't have a view on the... Does every judge have to have his or her own ratio? What's going on here?
All she had to do was make a finding, and she didn't. And that's what the Arbery decision says.
So great. You go back, she'll make the finding, another 72 months, you come back.
That's exactly why I'm asking you not to remand only on that issue. We believe the quantity that she determined was clearly erroneous based on the record. At base, what we're talking about here is a guy sentenced to 6 years in federal prison for allegedly dealing $600 worth of drugs. That's the government's position. $600. That's just shocks the conscience. It's okay. Patently unreasonable.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pons. So, Mr. Getter?
Good morning. May it please the Court. Matthew Getter.
Is that right? 6 years for $600, $100 a year?
A little more than $600. It's about $690 or so. But yes, Judge, that is the sentence he received. And in light of the 3553A factors that the judge considered, we believe the sentence was reasonable and appropriate. The judge considered a number of factors, including the nature of the offense, as Your Honor pointed out, the problems associated with drug dealing in the community, his lack of remorse. And the PSR was rife with his criminal history. All those things being considered, we believe a 72-month sentence was appropriate and the judgment.
What about the price discrepancies that Mr. Potts emphasized?
If Your Honor is referring to that by the differences between what the agents testify to and what the Sentencing Commission report says, as we pointed out in our brief, there are problems with the Sentencing Commission report. First is the methodology that they use. As we pointed out, what the Sentencing Commission did is they took a very rough average of the highest price in one of the 20 metropolitan communities that they examined versus the lowest price in one of the 20 metropolitan communities they examined, and then came up with the average of those two numbers. The Sentencing Commission report also fails, as Your Honor pointed out, and I believe as Mr. Potts acknowledged, that it doesn't say whether it's dealing with retail versus wholesale prices. If you were to take the price of approximately $250 per gram set out in the Sentencing Commission report and extrapolate that, that would come out to, I believe, a $250,000 price for a kilo of cocaine, which is not the case. Agent Wilson testified that a kilo of cocaine in Aurora in 2004 was approximately $20,000, a little more. So the Sentencing Commission report simply can't be right on what the...
Well, his chart also contains some what he describes as FBI estimates that are considerably higher than the testimony in this case.
It does, Judge, but it goes back to the question of what meaning this sentencing report has on the ground when it comes to how drugs are being dealt in different levels of the distribution chain in Aurora in 2004. And both the experts testified that it was about, excuse me, Agent Wilson testified, not Agent Colton, Agent Wilson testified that it was about $90 for a low-level distributor to obtain 3.5 grams of crack cocaine at that time and in that place. All those things being considered, Judge Manning appropriately decided that she would go with the opinion of the people who are on the ground as opposed to what the Sentencing Commission put together based on data that they had compiled and hadn't specified the meaning of. So given the testimony that Judge Manning had, given both from the agents, from the cooperator, from the recorded telephone calls that were intercepted, she was clearly justified and did not err in deciding that it was 23 grams of crack cocaine, given all the information that was before her. The second argument that the defendant raised is the argument about relevant conduct. The evidence showed that during the course of the two 30-day periods of interception, which I believe were separated by about a month, there were seven or eight transactions that went on between the defendant and Mr. Venson. And this was clearly part of a course of conduct. It was the same supplier, the same drug, the same general location, the same purpose, namely for him to obtain the drugs to resell it, the same, to the extent you could call it a modus operandi. It was a modus operandi. He would call him, he would meet him, get the drugs, and then presumably resell it. The judge didn't need to specifically set forth the reasons why she felt it was relevant conduct. As this court pointed out in U.S. versus Arroyo and in U.S. versus Wilson, if it's obvious from the record why the judge is concluding that it was relevant, that it was relevant conduct, that should be enough. And given the fact that over the course of 2 days of, I shouldn't say 2 days, but on two different days that this sentencing hearing was held, the judge heard a lot of evidence concerning these deals and this evidence. And it was clear that she had concluded that these other deals were relevant conduct, part of the same course of conduct as the count of conviction. The third argument that the defendant raises...
Well, Mr. Potts said there's no evidence that he doesn't use cocaine himself as well as selling it.
One of the recorded conversations has Mr. I believe it was the first one, has Mr. Johnson saying, do you have any green? And when Mr. Parker said no, Mr. Johnson said, well, I don't need any yams. So clearly,
he said, I'm sorry?
I don't need any yams. Green versus yams. It's clear that, at least I believe Mr. Parker explained, that referred to two different kinds of drugs, green being marijuana, yams being crack cocaine. When Mr. Johnson was arrested, he gave a statement to Agent Brotan in which he said, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, I smoke marijuana, but I don't mess with crack. He was honest about the first part of that statement, but dishonest about the second part of that statement. He did use marijuana, but he also sold crack cocaine. And he elicited that testimony from Agent Brotan at his trial. And Judge Manning considered that in deciding whether or not he was buying marijuana or buying crack cocaine for resale. One of the two agents, I believe it was Agent Cullen, if I'm not mistaken, testified that he had never heard marijuana referred to as being part of a ball or an eighth of an ounce. And there was no evidence that he was buying marijuana other than that one request for green, which wasn't met. There's no evidence that in any of these calls he was requesting marijuana as opposed to crack cocaine for resale.
Almost this entire sentencing transcript is consumed by the evidence and discussion of the drug quantity issue and the relevant conduct issue. And when the judge actually gets down to considering other factors, she just summarily says this is a serious offense and it hurts the community, and so I'm reimposing the same sentence. She didn't really grapple with any other arguments. She didn't touch the nature of the defendant's prior criminal record. She didn't touch the issue of the crack powder disparity, even though she was reminded to several times. And so when she actually gets down to brass tacks here and imposes sentence, it's very cursory.
It's not a tome. It's not a treatise that she's given, Your Honor.
It doesn't have to be, but, I mean, she's supposed to at least address the hit basis, and she didn't really make an effort to do that.
And that's what I was going to get to, Judge, is that while a judge needs to set forth the basis for her sentence, the explanation for the sentence doesn't need to be detailed to that nature. It just needs to show that she has considered the 53 factors and has imposed a sentence based on those factors. And it's clear, even though she didn't go into a great deal of depth about them, that she did consider them in just the things that Your Honor mentioned.
It's not clear she considered the ratio argument that was advanced in a significant way. And it's not clear that she considered the severity of the offense as a proportional matter, you know, this whole idea of what $690 worth of cocaine transactions is worth as compared to other drug cases in the system.
I think, Your Honor, that while she didn't explicitly say, this is what I think of the crack powder ratio, or even to the extent of saying I think it should be 10 to 1 or 25 to 1, as you pointed out, the argument was rife with the defendant's argument that it should be 1 to 1 as opposed to 100 to 1. I don't think there's any way that anyone can look at this record in its totality and say that the district court judge did not consider.
What did you say about the ratio at the sentencing hearing?
Judge, I don't think I explicitly said one way or another that the ratio should be this, that, or the other. I gave what I would call our standard statement from the Attorney General about the crack powder issue, and then went on to address the 3553 factors. There was one thing that I realized that I didn't point out in the brief that I think, given the defendant's argument, I would like the court to notice, and that is in the June 3rd transcript of the sentencing hearing at page 69 to 70, and I acknowledge this is not an explicit discussion of the crack powder ratio, but it does go to show that the district court judge was recognizing the argument, or at least suggests that she was. On page 69 at the bottom, there was, actually starting at the top of the page, there was a discussion that was going on about what the guidelines should be. And the defense, was arguing that, it should be 1-to-1, not 100-to-1. And the district court judge kept getting back to what are the guidelines here. And I pointed out to her at the, starting on line 19, Mr. Potts said, again, if you assume the 100-to-1 ratio, if you assume the 1-to-1 ratio, it's 21 to 27 months. I then jumped in and I said, paraphrasing, you have to start with the guidelines. And here's what the guidelines are. Beyond that, Judge, you can consider the 3553 factors. The court then said, right, all right, and then moved on to asking the defendant what he wanted to say for himself. Then at the bottom of page 70, again, Mr. Potts says, again, we would ask that the court base the guideline range on the 1-to-1 ratio rather than the 100-to-1 ratio. And again, the district court said, all right. Excuse me, that's where she asked the defendant to speak up on the top of page 71.
She did it at both times, and it's pretty clear from reading this transcript that she's ignoring Mr. Potts.
I respectfully, Judge, I disagree.
I mean, he's tried again and again. Will you please just say a few words on this argument? And she's just like, okay, next. I mean, that's the qualitative response to reading this transcript that I have. So
I realize I'm out of
defend
time.
It.
No, go ahead.
If I could just address that, I fall back on the U.S. versus, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing this, Petz, P-O-E-T-Z opinion. Thank you. Where this court said that you don't, as long as you can look at the totality of the record and see that the argument was addressed, then the judge doesn't need to explicitly discuss it. And we maintain that's what happened here, because there really were no other serious arguments that they made in mitigation of sentence. And then given the fact that the district court judge went 20 months below the low end of the guidelines, I don't know what else you could attribute that to.
How long did this resentencing hearing take, Mr. Gettler?
I'm sorry, Judge.
How long did this resentencing take? I know you said it was 2 days, but
it wasn't too. I tried to correct myself. It wasn't
I'm sure the transcript would reflect it was not 2 days. So what's your best guesstimate of the time you spent in front of the judge on this resentencing?
My best estimate, Judge, is on May 25th, maybe 45 minutes or so, 30 to 45 minutes. It's a rough estimate. Then June 3rd, where we had Agent Wilson testify and more lengthy argument, my estimate is an hour and a half, maybe an hour and three quarters.
Are you comfortable the judge considered the 1-to-1 ratio?
I am, Judge. I think she did. Of course, it would be my preference that she'd given a long diatribe
on
what she thinks it is.
Excuse me? How about just a mention?
I don't believe there is much else to mention.
Well, no, there isn't. And maybe it would help if the government, when presenting even the Attorney General's position, if we're getting on a remand, and that's a strong point made by defense counsel. Maybe the government could just urge the judge to address it. You don't have to abandon your position, Mr. Getter. But, you know, this was raised with some significance. And when you combine it with the extent of the relevant conduct discussion, I don't think it matches up with Boats or whatever. I think that it's a little stronger case than the, however that case is pronounced.
So you can just ask the judge, can't you, to make a record by, you know, briefly discussing the issue of the ratio in light of the Arbery case. You could just say that to her. It wouldn't be insulting. You just say, be nice to have a slightly fuller record, you know, is this going to be an appeal? So,
sure.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Getter. So, Mr. Potts, your time expired, but you can have another minute if you'd like.
Thank you. Just to be clear, it was not clear to me that she considered the ratio argument, and I'll leave it at that. But as far as the price issue goes, again, it's the government's position and the district court's finding that he got 23 grams of crack cocaine for $690. And you can look at the data we provided. Mr. Getter argues about how the data was calculated, but the bottom line is the $26 per gram isn't even within the range of the data. The average price of a kilogram was $36 per gram, meaning my client was supposedly purchasing crack cocaine for less than the average price per gram of a kilogram of crack cocaine. It just doesn't make any sense. And then as far as relevant conduct goes, again, it's not about whether the conduct was relevant. It's about whether there was enough proof based on those other calls to include that for the court to find by preponderance of the evidence that the conduct occurred. So it was about proof and not about relevancy. The cases the government cites on relevancy, we admit if there was enough evidence, there was a preponderance of the evidence that my client intended to distribute those drugs, of course they're relevant. They're all in the same course of conduct. And finally, I guess I would just like to point out that I seriously doubt without the conspiracy charge, the government would have had a week-long trial over $690 worth of drugs. And as Judge Sykes pointed out, $690, I just don't think the sentencing judge really considered our arguments on price.
How old is he?
31, and his wife and children were there.
What are his priors?
What's that?
What are his priors?
His priors are, he does have drug offenses, but they're not crack cocaine, they're marijuana. He did have a gun offense, but it wasn't. I think he was in a car with a gun.
Was that a felon in possession based on the prior marijuana?
I think
conviction?
So, but I can't tell you exactly.
But back in business soon. Okay, well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
Well, we appreciate your very vigorous and intelligent efforts on behalf of your client.
Thank you.
So.